Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasrinavadhitamastoma Vidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
So this is the first pada?
No, not quite.
Oh, okay. Because I think most is in that one, right? There's a lot
most
of...
Most is the, yeah, first four especially.
First four and then the, up to 11.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
this is,
it's very dense.
Yeah, so in other words, in here, this study, the first Adhikarana basically is all the philosophies in that. So that means in the first 11 verses. Out of 555. So if it appears we're not moving very quickly, don't worry about it, because at one point it'll just pick up.
So when Srila Prabhupada said he put everything in his first book and everything's in the first few...
Yeah, no, it's there. Ones. I think it's... I'm not sure what it is. It's one on Baladeva, either everything's in the first four or the first 11, and then Ramanuja, it's the other. So one of them is everything's in the four, and the other is everything's in 11.
The first four is often widely commented upon.
Oh, okay. Sutra. Okay. Okay. So then everybody does that, I guess. Ramanuja goes further. But basically, that's where everything is. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Depends how quickly the Vedanta Sutra goes. It goes really quick, we'll go into Sandarbhas. Or if we need the time, then we'll spend it on Bhagavatam. But that was the idea of putting the extra half class, is so that we don't have to worry about, you know, doing three classes at the end or something. You know, that was the compromise. I was saying three, you were saying two, so two and a half, and okay. Okay, introduction. The origin of Vedanta Sutra. In the India of old, the study of the Vedas was the special prerogative of the Brahmanas. There are four degrees of education in Vedic knowledge that corresponds to the four ashramas of Brahminical culture. The first degree of learning was the memorization of the Vedic Samhita, which consists of thousands of mantras divided into four sections, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, that are chanted by priests in glorification of the Supreme Being during sacrificial rituals. The second degree was the mastery of the Brahmana portion of the Vedas, which teaches rituals for fulfillment of duties to family, society, demigods, sages, and other living entities, and the Supreme Lord. The third degree was the mastery of the Aranyaka portion, which prepares the retired householder for complete renunciation. The fourth degree was the mastery of the Upanishads, which present the philosophy of the absolute truth to persons seeking liberation from birth and death, right? So in other words, the Veda is there. It's divided into four, you could say, sets of verses. So you have the Rig, Yajur, Samana, Atharva. Originally they were one, the Atharva Veda, but because it's very vast and it would be hard to understand, then for Kali Yuga, then it's been divided so that all the riks are taken out in one place, all the pros are taken out, all the samans, and then the miscellaneous remains as the Atharva. Right. So in other words, the Atharva Veda before had all the hymns, all the songs off the hymns, and all the pros off the hymns. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. So before it was one Veda, that's why it's sometimes gets confusing on about, you know, okay, there's four Vedas, but now within the Veda there's four parts. And so that's what has been discussed here. Those typically then follow the four ashrams. Right? Not specifically, but generally, typically. So the first is the Samhita, which means all the verses of the Veda itself. So if you have the Rig Veda Samhita, that's all the verses. Those are memorized by the brahmacharis, right? So while the memory still exists, you memorize all the verses, right? Then you're going to learn how to practically apply and all this and that, but it's not going to be an occupation. You just know how to do yajna, you know how to do the different things. Then as a grihastha, that's when they would use the brahmanas, which is how to use the verses for all the variety of worship that's done in the social environment, right? So that from the brahmanas, then you get the Dharma Sutras and the Griha Sutras. So that would mean you would have all your standard, from the Griha Sutras, you get all your samskaras and these rituals that you perform in household life, and the Dharma Sutras, then what is the proper activities and anything bigger like this. Okay? Then, but that's only how to use it. Then, in the Vanaprastha stage, then the metaphysics on what's the meaning of the verses, what's the meaning of the words, what are the esoteric aspects of it.
That's the
Aranyakas. That's the Aranyakas, yeah. Then, the fourth stage is the Upanishads, that is the Sannyasi, so that's the focus is on what's the spiritual meaning of the Vedas. Right? So as devotees, we're basically studying the fourth section first. Basically, it's except for a few devotees in the movement, no one studies, memorizes the Samhitas, and very few know Brahmanas and Aranyakas. Like that. So, because the most important is the Upanishads, it's trying to get you to that stage. So the stage of sannyas, that's the stage that the Vedic culture is trying to get everyone to. Right? Where everything is being done simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Right? There's no material desire for karma and jnana. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why all devotees will study Isha Upanishad and all that. So we're starting at the end. Does that make sense? Like that, yes. But this is meaning when you do your major focus. Does that make sense? Brahmacharis are studying all of them, but they can memorize the verses, so they focus on that. Grihasthas will study all of them, but they're focusing on applying them. Right? The Vanaprasthas are studying all of them, but then what's the esoteric meanings of all like that, and then the sannyasis, then the last. Does that make sense? How that's working? Yeah, okay. Yes. I'm not sure. Have we ever done that before?
No.
We have. Yeah, but now it's not so too hot. It's just from riding the bicycle and hot. Seems to take a while to cool down after riding the bicycle. Yes?
There's a doubt that we present Krishna consciousness from this high level.
Yes.
And then many people apparently have spiritual indigestion because of that. They can...
Are we talking about this for those who are new to Krishna consciousness?
New, and then we straight give them, you know, everything, and they just...
That's because it comes along with the culture. So the point is that sannyasi has already practiced the culture. He's as the brahmachari, as the grihastha, as the vanaprastha. And so then his focus on the Vedanta, then it's already combined with everything else. So it's a natural lifestyle. So when we give these things, then we start with the principles of it and give also a lifestyle that matches it. Much of the time what the devotees are giving who are the indigestion is not technically the Vedanta. It'll be the secondary aspects. Does that make sense? You know, you have to chant, you got to get up and you got to do this and that. That's the practices. That one you have to, you know, see how quickly or slowly. But understanding that there's a supreme absolute, everything's coming from them, there's the soul, the relationship of the soul with the supreme, that generally is not a problem. You know, unless, of course, they have a... they're following the stricture that those from Baal, then you don't associate with. Then you might have a problem. Then they'll get so then you just stick to the element of the supreme. Supreme, Paramatma, that kind of aspect, until they can adjust to the concept of devotional and like that. But once they adjust it to that, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then there's a problem. So in other words, if someone's from a, let's say, if someone's not a strict practitioner of whatever they're from, they won't have a problem. Mm-hmm. If they're more strict, then they'll have a problem. Right?
Yeah.
You know, except for a little bit Catholics, because they have the element that they do have kind of like icons and stuff like that. Orthodox. Either East Orthodox. So they'll have a little less problem with that. Protestants, if they're more strict, they'll have a problem. If they're not so strict, then like everybody else, it's not a problem. But then your Judaic, your Islamic, if they're strict, they'll have a problem because of the deity thing. But if not, then they won't. So that part you have to see. It's just a matter of Brahman, anybody can take, even an atheist. Paramatma, then that takes some faith, because that's generally all the farther any religion goes these days. Like that. They'll talk about the personal, but actually, because Paramatma is a person. But it's not so much about what Paramatma likes and his things, other than, you know, do what he says, things go well, earth doesn't open up, you don't fall inside along with your golden calf. You know? Like that, you know, people don't turn into salt, you know, walls don't come falling, tumbling down, you know, that kind of thing. But why those are there, and him as a person, and his particular, that may be a difficulty. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedanta presentation is basically more from that platform of Brahman, but it's talking about the other. So it's the language of Brahman, but it's talking about all three. That's why Vedanta, like I remember once I was in, I think, Dubai in the airport, and some, you know, how you say, gentleman wearing all white with a beard and no mustache and a little cap on his head, then came and was asking what's happening, right? You know, because we're on all the robes, you know, yoga and that. And so then for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, we just discussed straight Vedanta. There was nothing he didn't agree with. Everything was fine. He was very inspired. Because there isn't actually any difference. Religion is one thing. It's just a matter of how you're going to apply it. That's what makes it. Does that make sense? When you apply religion according to the line of Abraham, then you get those forms. Right? When you know, like this. So that's all, you know, there's the same as we were talking, remember Second Canto, and then we had the Oriental professor show up, and then all the discussions about Qi and Li and all the Taoist, you know, kind of things like that. We can express it. So they only know that side of it. So then it's just what was been brought out there, or Buddhism, then what's brought out there. But actually, religion is one thing, because there is only one supreme and his laws. So there is only one religion. How you apply it, how you practice it, how much you understand the supreme, that's another thing. So the Vedanta is the greatest exposition, you could say, about the supreme. And of the six schools of Vedanta, then Achintabheda Beda Tattva will be the biggest. Therefore, if you understand Achintabheda Beda Tattva, you can discuss it at any level for anybody else. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, it's also just that's the it's that way with anything. Somebody's sick. The doctor's expertise is how they take care. So then it's not that, oh, they can't digest Vedanta. No, it's they can't digest how much we may give them. The Vedanta is the nature of the soul. In the spiritual world, there's only Vedanta. They don't have the other five schools. Right? You know. Yes?
When you mention the six schools, it's four Vaishnava Sampradayas plus Shankaras plus...
Baladev.
Okay.
Yes. Is that okay? Yeah. So in other words, it is doable. You can. Explain it. Is that... Okay. The texts studied in the four stages of formal Vedic education are collectively called Shruti Shastra, scripture that is to be heard by the Brahmanas. But Shruti Shastra is not all there is to the Vedic literature. Chandogya Upanishad 7.1.2 declares that the Puranas and Itihasas comprise the fifth division of the Vedic study. The Puranas and Itihasas teach the same knowledge as the four Vedas, illustrating it with extensive historical narrations, right? Yes. Oh, we did. Yes, we did. Okay, footnote one. That was with the fourth degree was the mastery of the Upanishads, which present the philosophy of the absolute truth to persons seeking liberation from birth and death. Footnote one. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on these divisions. According to the great dictionary compiler Hemachandra, also known as Koshikara, Vedanta refers to the purport of the Upanishads and the Brahmana portion of the Vedas. Professor Apte, in his dictionary, describes the Brahmana portion of the Vedas as that portion which states the rules for employment of hymns at various sacrifices and gives detailed explanations of their origin, sometimes with lengthy illustrations in the form of legends and stories. It is distinct from the mantra portion of the Vedas. Right, so the Samhita is the mantra, right? And the Brahmanas then is how it's used, and then as it's described here, even giving explanations and histories behind it and everything. Because when you have it, you have every verse has a particular sage that has practiced that verse in meditation and has become perfect. So then there must be some history. Right? Is that... Yeah. Okay. Hemachandra says that the supplement of the Vedas is called the Vedanta Sutra. Veda means knowledge and anta means the end. In other words, proper understanding of the ultimate purport of the Vedas is called Vedanta knowledge. Such knowledge as given in the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra must be supported by the Upanishads. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 7, 106, purport. So, Vedanta means the end of knowledge. Right? So you have how do you say? Purva Mimamsa and Uttari Mimamsa. So Purva means before or beginning. So that will be the Brahmanas, the Samhita and the Brahmanas. And that's what's practiced by Jaimini and his followers. So his philosophy is known as Purva Mimamsa. But Uttari Mimamsa means it's actually about Upanishads. So when we say the Upanishads is the commentary on all these others, then that's the principle that's there. Does that make sense?
Yes. Aranyakas,
they will be the metaphysics. So, of course, the Upanishads are commenting on that. But generally, it's the practical application and all that they're needing. You know, it's like we get into the creation and all the metaphysical things there, the psychology and all that. Mm-hmm. That will be what the Aranyakas will be dealing with. It's part of Uttari Mimamsa, yes.
And who is the sage?
Vyasa.
Right. Yes. Do the Aranyakas deal with similar elements like Sankhya philosophy?
Yes, basically like that. You know, so in other words, if someone is... One is not so inspired to study that because one is too busy applying it. So when one is retired, then one can sit down and, okay, well, what does all this mean? Right? So we, as devotees, we're going straight to Vedanta. So then we know what the actual ultimate, though we may not necessarily know the metaphysical or the technical. Right? We know the verse and we know the actual spiritual purport. So technically how to use it and metaphysically what it means, that we may or may not know. That will come with time. So it's like if we know the purport, you can go back to Godhead. But if you only know the other three, then that's not going to happen. So that's the first thing. And with time, naturally these will become more and more known and part of the culture, where then all those other three will just be part of what you do, but the focus will still be on Vedanta. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like sometimes you see devotees will get interested in the Vedic activities. Right? So the Veda itself, that means the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Samhita, is still called Aparavidya. It's not transcendental. Right? It's coming from the Lord, so it's eternal. And it's authority, it's what we follow. But the point is it in itself, without the Vedanta, won't give you the spiritual result. Right? So, as devotees, tonight's devotees may get into these things, but if they think that this is something new and special, and, you know, oh, we've studied all that philosophy, and now this is something of substance that we can really, you know, get people, attract people, and all that, they've missed the point. Because it's very easy to get people interested in all these things, right? You do it in the Vedic sense, then it has that form. But if you do it in a non-Vedic sense, it's called New Age. And it's very popular, New Age. But chanting Hare Krishna, that's less popular. Right? In other words, a lot of people are in the New Age. A much smaller group is into kirtan, and a much smaller group is into kirtan heard from parampara. Right? So even though, yes, it will attract people, but so will so many other things. Set up a stage down at the end of the street, get a lot of girls up there dancing with some music, you know, like that, you'll get a lot of people coming. Yeah. Yes?
The Upanishad is this Paravidya?
Yes, yes. The Upanishad is actually Paravidya. So when it says, when we say Paravidya, that means Upanishads. But its position is therefore in the third section of study of the 14 books. Of the, what is it? Veda, Upaveda, Upangas. Yeah? Is that the Upangas is there? Because it's through the Upangas that you really are able to understand and apply the Veda. Right? The Veda is the main thing. You have the four Vedas. Then you have the Vedangas, so that you can approach it. So you know the Sanskrit, then the rituals, and the astronomy. Because then you know appropriate times for performing the rituals, and you can access it because of the language. But how are you going to apply that in your life? That's going to be the Vedanta philosophy. That's going to be the histories. That's going to be Dharma Shastra. That's going to be logic. Does that make sense?
That's the Upangas.
That's the Upangas, those four, yes. So of that, then the Vedanta, that's Paravidya. So Vedanta and Pancharatra, those are considered transcendental. And then all the other 13, those are considered material. But they're the best material, because those are the medium that you would naturally use, if available, to serve Krishna. Right, because they're the best. They're their material nature and the mode of goodness. You know, with the options of how to connect passion and ignorance. Right. So, in other words, the best goodness is the easiest to use for pure goodness. Does that work? Yes. Yes.
What are Aranyakas?
Aranyakas are the as I mentioned before, the metaphysical explanations of the mantras and ritual. Okay. Then, The fifth Veda is known as Smriti Shastra, scripture that must be remembered. Srila Vyasadeva compiled it into 18 Puranas and Mahabharata. The Smriti Shastra was permitted to non-Brahmanas. At Naimisharanya, therefore, Suta Goswami, a non-Brahmana by birth, was requested by the Great Assembly of Brahmanas to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana that his father, Ramaharshana, had learned directly from Vyas. Because being in story form, the point is it's not the Vedanta is accessible by the soul. But the soul tends to have coverings, right? You have an assembly, you don't just have a bunch of, you know, souls floating around, right? So the conditioning is there. The tendency is that for Brahmanas, then the intellectual aspect is comfortable for them, right? But for others, they generally tend to, when it comes in the form of the stories and that, it's much easier to relate to. But so, the point is it's just a medium that there. It's not that therefore it's less. Some will take it therefore that the Smriti Shastras are something less, right? Because they don't have so much of that nerd aspect to them. Right, so nerds always consider themselves the superior, except in, of course, social situations. But when it comes to intellect, they're always considered superior. Right. So, but the point is there it's written. So Bhagavatam is written as the topmost of the Smriti Shastra, that it's pure Vedanta philosophy. So all the benefits that you would get from Shruti, the topmost benefit you get from Srimad Bhagavatam. And because of the form of it, you actually get more. Right? So it's the Upanishads and more. Because the Upanishads are basically speaking through the medium of Brahma-gyan. Right? Knowledge of Brahman. Knowledge of transcendence. So they will put you on the transcendental platform. But that supreme transcendental platform of bhakti, that is discussed, but it's not seen as well. Right? Just like the Mahabharata talks about Krishna and the devotees, but you may miss it. So same with the Upanishads. Studying just the Upanishads, you may miss it. So therefore, in line with the Bhagavatam, the Acharyas give commentaries on the Upanishads. Then it actually takes on its full benefit. That's actually what it's for. Because the Upanishads, the Vedic philosophy, is the Chintaveda Veda Tattva. But it's not necessarily understood. So it's only when Govindaji reveals that to Baladev, then it's widely known and can be studied by others. But otherwise, that is the original philosophy. Right? Then when you drop down to Vaikuntha, then you get the other four schools. When you drop down to Brahman, then you get that school, and then it's downhill from there. Right? So... Okay. Before Vyasadeva's compilation, the Vedas had long been taught in the Brahmana ashramas by six schools of Vedic philosophy. Each of these schools had come to be associated with a famous sage who was the author of a sutra, code, expressing the essence of his darshan, standpoint on the ultimate meaning or purpose of the Veda. Right? Yes.
Six schools?
See, you have six schools of Vedic philosophy. Right? Now within the sixth school, Vedanta, there are six schools. So that you don't get the two mixed.
The Sampradaya?
Yes. Yes. Means Baladev, that's the sixth school. So the first school is Gotama, right, with Nyaya. Then the second school is Vaisheshika with
Kanada.
Oh, Kanada is the person? Vaisheshika is the philosophy.
Yes.
Oh, okay, I always thought it was the other way. Yeah, so Kanada is the sage. Vaisheshika is the philosophy. That's the atomic. The first one's logic. The second one's atomic principle. Right? They kind of go in pairs a bit, you know. Then you have Kapila with Shankya. In the third are metaphysics. Huh? And then the fourth, Patanjali with yoga. Then the fifth will be Purva Mimamsa with Jaimini. And then the last will be, with Vyasa, will be Uttara Mimamsa. Right? So now of Vyasas, then you'll get six in schools. Does that make sense? So how many schools are in the other ones? That we don't get into, but they have breakdowns also. But you know.
What are the six?
The six. So you have Shankara for the Advait, right? You have Ramanuja with Vishishta Dwait, Vishnu Swami with Vishuddha Dwait, Nimbarkacharya with Dwait Advait, and Baladev with Achinta Beda Veda Tattva. So that's answered the question that's been there for the last 7 years. Okay. Just seeing this. Oh, hey.
What's waiting?
Sorry?
What's waiting?
Okay, yeah. Well, now it means something. Right before.
It's
right.
Only five.
Hmm?
I think you have to mention Madhvacharya.
Oh, Madhvacharya with Dwait. Oh. Yes. Because the class was on the oneness. So it got all the ones with oneness in them. Yeah, so there's five of them all have oneness in them, and only one doesn't.
No one.
So
yes.
Yeah.
No, he's Dwait. Shuddha Dwait is Vishnu Swami. Right? Vishishta Dwait, Ramanuja, Vishuddha Dwait is. Yeah. Then Madhvacharya with Dwait, and then Achinta Beda Veda Tattva. Right. Now the interesting thing is, he does when he's talking about on the spiritual side in the spiritual world, then he talks about a Dwait. But before that, on this side, it's not even up for discussion, not one syllable. Like that, because the point is that Ramanuja already presented so nicely the special, you know, how you say, special oneness. You know, of that relationship with the Lord, the oneness in qualities, the oneness in purpose, like this. And so that was already presented, and so many Mayavadis and that did not surrender. They take advantage. Oh, see, so there's oneness, so then they just stick to their oneness. So he came in just basically like with a club, because, you know, how you say, Bhima, Hanuman, you know, club kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just, no, there's only two. There's no discussion. No, but what about the, we are not discussing that. So that's why it's sometimes thought that Madhvacharya was opposed to Ramanuja's. No, it was just he's coming up and cleaning up what riff-raff is left that didn't surrender to Ramanuja. Right? In other words, it's like Shankaracharya. He would go into a place, speak Vedanta, those who surrendered, great, he'd move on. Those who didn't surrender, then when he moved on, then the, what are those guys called? You see them at Kumbh Mela, they don't wear any Nagababas. The Nagababas came in and they just wiped the place out like that, you know. So it's like so like that, you know. But like that. As Vaishnavas it's more refined. Right. So that makes sense? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the thing. But it's not that he doesn't accept that aspect. He just doesn't accept it as an aspect of preaching, because the point is if they would accept that as preaching, they would have already surrendered to Ramanuja. But since they haven't, that means they can't discuss it. They don't have the adhikar. So therefore, it's just Dwait. And only then you can, once they get to that point of surrender, then on that topmost platform, then you may, you know, in prapatti and stuff like that, then they may talk about that. But before that, they don't talk about it, so it's never generally preached.
So like apparent differences between acharya and basically the preaching mission.
Yes, that's all. It's apparent, because they all got their mandate from Lord Chaitanya, so how could it be different?
Yes.
You know, it's like if you say, okay, you cook the halava, you cook the puris, you cook the sabji, and, you know, you make the drink. You can say, oh, but they're all opposed to each other. They're so different. You know, one is dry, one is wet, one is being fried, one is being boiled, like this and that. You know, how do we reconcile? It's one meal.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing, is that they're all coming and preaching to different classes of conditioned souls. So each one of them works for a particular group. Achinta Beda Beda Tattva can work for everybody, But, you know, you need some softening up first before. Like that. You understand? So that's why Shankara came in first, to bring them back to the Veda. But they're not just going to come like that back to the Veda. Right? So they're going to be Buddhists, but Buddhists with Vedic authority rather than non-Vedic authority. Yeah. So that's all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. To dispel the confusion that had arisen amongst Brahmanas because of the incongruities of these standpoints, Vyasa wrote Vedanta Sutra as a final judgment on the arguments of the six schools, as well as those of other philosophies. Right? Because these are the six main schools, and they have all kinds of little branches here and there that they may not get into things properly. Right? You know, so, but if you have the main, then you don't have to worry about the others.
Is it also referring to those schools that don't accept the Vedas?
It could be that also, yes. So your Buddhist, your Charvaks, your Jains, all, you know, mm-hmm. all and sundry. Yeah. Okay. Vedanta Sutra forms the third great body of Vedic literature after the Shruti Shastra and Smriti. It is known as Nyaya Shastra. Right? So in here, then you have Shruti, Smriti, and Nyaya. So then Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, they would be considered within this category. Okay? Like that. All the Vedas, that would be Shruti. All the other Vedic literature, that would be Smriti. Okay? Yeah? Yeah. So that's another way of categorizing. Because you're trying, why you're doing this is because you're trying to establish that you have Shruti and Smriti, but its actual purpose is transcendence. Therefore, it's given its own place. Because otherwise, you just say, oh, it's just a book. No, it's its own category. Yes?
Why would they call it Nyaya?
Nyaya, because the presentation is through logic. The sutras, it's just the medium that they're using. You know, because it's using the Panchanga Nyaya. So that's the presentation, you know, very technically. Like Prabhupada in his purports uses Panchanga Nyaya, but how many people notice? Yeah. But Vedanta Sutra, that's all there is. And so that's why people don't notice Vedanta Sutra, because it doesn't make sense. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Because you have, yeah. You explain all about the Adhikaranas and that?
Yeah,
so that comes up. Because that's the logic. One Adhikarana is the complete logic. So there's a thesis in there, and then there's all the explanations that goes on. Then it moves on to the next point. Does it explain how many Adhikaranas there are?
No, I don't have that.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. But it's like, any idea what it is? Ten in the first pot. 160 around, like 160 Adhikaranas. In other words, Adhikarana means the Panchanga Nyaya and Adhikarana are basically the same thing. The Panchanga Nyaya means it has these five sections. Applying those five sections in a practical exposition of logic, that's an Adhikarana.
So each purport can be an Adhikarana?
Yes. Or you may see that they're working in a group, but we're just talking about Vedanta Sutra. So that means there's, let's say in that way, there's like 160 points of Vedanta philosophy that are brought out. That you know those points, you know all the Vedanta philosophy. And I would expect that those similar points with finer details is what are the Adhikaranas of Satsandarbha. Because Bhagavatam being the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, it'll be commenting on the same points. Just it'll get into finer aspects. Because here you're simply trying to get people to appreciate Vedanta as the top, as opposed to the other six schools. Does that make sense? So in here, there's another way, just so it's confusing. We can also use, say, you have the six schools of Vedic philosophy, the six schools of Vedanta. We can say there's five schools of Vedic philosophy, you know, that are, not as such,
incomplete understanding?
Yeah, incomplete understanding, not devotional. And then there's Vyasadeva, which is complete. But also sometimes we'll say the six schools of Vedic philosophy, meaning they're all not complete. That when we say like that, then we're saying the sixth school means Shankara. You understand? And only then the Vaishnav have the proper understanding. So then in that way we'll do the six schools of Vedic philosophy, and then there's Vaishnava understanding. Does that make sense? So it's used in this few various ways. Okay. It is known as Nyaya Shastra, scripture of philosophical disputation. Footnote 2. It's also called Prastantraya. He's going to use that. Okay, great. The footnote 2. Srila Prabhupada describes the position of Vedanta Sutra in another passage as follows. According to learned scholars, there are three different sources of knowledge, which are called Prastantraya. According to these scholars, Vedanta is one of such sources, for it presents Vedic knowledge on the basis of logic and sound arguments. In the Bhagavad Gita 13.5, the Lord says, Brahma Sutra Paraischaiva Hetu Madbhir Vinischitai. Understanding of the ultimate goal of life is ascertained in the Brahma Sutra by legitimate logic and argument concerning cause and effect. Okay, so that's why all the Shankhya, all the analytical aspects fit very nicely. Right? So that we've studied now all these, you know, the Gita, the second canto, third canto, fourth canto, where it's analyzing so much the metaphysics and everything like that. That's why it shouldn't be so difficult approaching Vedanta Sutra now. It's new, so from that aspect it'll be something, but technically it's something that we've dealt with. Therefore, the Vedanta Sutra is known as Nyaya Prasthana. The Upanishads are known as Shruti Prasthana and Gita. And the Gita, Mahabharata, and Puranas are known as Smriti Prasthana. Okay. So all of these are explaining the philosophy, but it's just a matter of how, as evidence, then how they're doing it. So Vedanta is doing it through logic. The Mahabharata, the Puranas, the Gita are doing it through the history, the stories. And then the Upanishads are doing it in their form, which is kind of very esoteric. Mm-hmm. He walks, but he does not walk, like that kind of stuff.
He said that Nyaya, it's Vedanta Upanishad and Bhagavad Gita.
Means they're the same philosophy, but what it is they're each in their own category. Means they're all, should have said before is what I mentioned there, those are all paravidya, all transcendental knowledge. So Bhagavatam, Gita, and the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, they're all transcendental knowledge. They're all paravidya. But the Upanishads will be Shruti Prasthan, the Vedanta Sutra will be Nyaya Prasthan, and Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam would be Smriti Prasthan. So that's probably has made that more clear. Yes.
Mahabharata being listed here, is that included also in Paravidya because of the Bhagavad Gita?
Only because of the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, it's an itihas, so it would count within the Puranas section. So it would be an aparavidya. In other words, how we understand it is Paravidya.
And from Bhagavatam.
Yeah, like first canto of Bhagavatam, that is Mahabharata as Paravidya. But if you don't see it like that, then it's aparavidya.
With the exception of Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, with the exception of Gita. But that's why, from what I can understand, is why he wrote it again in the first canto to actually, because he wrote Mahabharata as the conclusion, but it wasn't, as Vyasadeva as Narad Muni pointed out, it's not clear. The common person won't catch it. They'll just see the rules and regulations, what I can do, and all that, take that, and then what they can't do. You understand? It's just like, the element is that we're offering everything to Krishna. So you have something that you like to eat that you think is special, take that offer to Krishna, then it's very nice. Okay, people are going to take that. The other parts, because in the discussion it'll come along, is that we shouldn't be thinking about, I'm going to eat this, I want to eat this, that's why I'm cooking it. I should be cooking something for Krishna. So naturally I would cook what Krishna would like. That part won't be seen. So it'll just be, oh, we can cook anything, it doesn't matter, and all this, that other stuff, that's strict, that's fanatic. That's what Narad Muni said will happen by Mahabharata. But you need to be in the mode of goodness to get into Maya with Mahabharata. that's the only problem. That's why it doesn't distract. Most adults, that's kid stuff. Every problem they have on the social platform that they want solved, socially, their family, their community, economics, administration, it's all in the Mahabharata. Every last thing, that's what Vyasadeva's point. Whatever is of value within the Vedic literature that you need to know to practice in your life, it's in Mahabharata. And he put in Krishna consciousness, 25%. Right? 25% of 100,000 is on Pandavas and Krishna. But because the nature is that people are going to go by volume, numbers, they're going to take it that it's not so important as the others. So they'll get distracted. Hence you have the Hindus, and they follow very nicely Mahabharata. And it's working. 5,000 years later, they still make oodles of money and they still have families. Right? It all works. Right? Everybody gets married. Right? You go out into the village, the most weirdest looking person is married. Happily. Right? In the West, unless you're out of, Baywatch, you don't get married. And even then you don't get married. I don't know. It's so weird. Because they follow the tradition and it works nicely. So Mahabharata works. Right? For most adults, it's kid stories. But it's actually what they're looking for. But only having that, then you only come up to the platform of the Hindu. So you're a nice material guy. Right? As opposed to, I guess, material girl. Right? Okay, so you have this nice material guy. So it's supposed to be a nice spiritual guy that's materially competent. Therefore, that's then what Bhagavatam is describing. But it appears to correct that view so that you understand actually the viewpoint, the first canto, and deals with that. It also nicely answers the question, how was the Bhagavatam come to be spoken? So for it to be spoken, then you had to have Parikshit Maharaj and the whole history, so you have to go back to Utra. So it starts with Utra. And then it goes through. So then you get all the highlights of the whole Mahabharata. In other words, the highlights of the Mahabharata are about Krishna and the Pandavas. So all those 25,000 are put in a synopsis there. And the other 75,000, those are, you want that? Read the Mahabharata. Is that what you said? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
When war started.
When war.
Mahabharata.
Okay.
When insect was moving.
One?
Insect.
On
the ground.
Okay.
So Vyasa Rishi was, why he was telling about this part?
Why was he telling about the insect? So that means the point is you have to consider all these things. Either from the astrological, what is this insect, which way he's going, how fast he's moving, what direction, what kind of bug it is, and all those different kind of things. So you connect to the Vedas. At the same time, is you're not, no need to kill the bugs.
He was asking the insect that, what is going to start it, all the fabrics are made because of the vibration.
He's moving, yeah, because he doesn't want to get run over. The point is that's family, that's how it works. In other words, you consider that you have responsibilities. You can't be irresponsible. Even if you're a bug, you still have to be responsible. So in other words, when you come out of the factory when you're working on payday with money in your pocket And as you walk out across the street, they set up temporary liquor shops. You don't go and buy anything because you have a family. Right? In other words, you don't do crazy stuff. You have a family. No. The point is in Mahabharata, all these different things, as we said, anything on Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is explained in Mahabharata. Right? So this would be an aspect of Dharma or Artha. Right? But what we're saying, what we're discussing here, because the topic is Nyaya Prashtana, is that even you have that, unless you understand the transcendental, it doesn't come to... Because as it is here, the bug has his whole family and he's responsible. And the, you know, gentleman in Calcutta, he has a family and he's responsible. What's the difference? If they don't become Krishna conscious, technically there's no difference. You know, it was just cheaper life for the bug. He didn't have to buy it, you know, have a 30-year mortgage on a house. Well, the guy in Calcutta does. So actually the bug's life is easier, right? As you'll notice, they made a movie on the bug's life, not on the guy in Calcutta's life. So, right? So, much easier, much better. That's a whole... No. That's another thing. The point is the bug has no business in the war, so he's leaving the battlefield. The chariots, that's for the kshatriyas and all that. Yes?
You mentioned nice materialistic person. That's one person who does his duty all the time and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of person is nice, spiritual person?
Means any spiritual person is nice.
Any spiritual person.
But then there's nice, nicer, and nicest. Yeah.
But what goes under the word nice? What kind of meaning is
nice? Nice is a general catch-all for good. What is good? Fabulous.
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar.
So now we are left in fabulous.
Yes, and what do you mean by what do you mean?
When you say a nice materialistic person, it means a person who does his duty, his family.
In other words, he's following the Vedas. And he's situated in the mode of goodness. But mode of goodness, you're still in the material world. So unless you get to pure goodness or transcendence, which the Vedanta is describing, then only human life becomes perfect. Human life begins with following Dharma. In other words, the nice guy is the beginning of human life. But actual point of human life, then higher than that is, then he gets liberated, but higher than that is the devotion. So when it comes to pure goodness, that's the real thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. The Saddarshanas, six standpoints, are Nyaya, logic, Vaisheshika, atomic theory, Shankhya, analysis of matter and spirit, Yoga, the discipline of self-realization, Karma Mimamsa, science of fruitive work, and Vedanta, science of God-realization. The Saddarshana are termed Astika, from Asti, or it is so, because they all acknowledge the Veda to be authoritative. The Gnostic philosophies of the Charvaks, Buddhists, and Jains, Nasti, it is not so, reject the Vedas. Right? So like you said, then Shankara brought the Buddhists back in to be Astik instead of Gnostic. But they're still just as much in Maya. Nasty. Yeah, that's fair. Well, it depends. If you get into Tibetan ones, then it gets a bit nasty, yeah. Okay.
They've given up a heap, so.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I know of only... I mean, it's a general principle before it was that Buddhism, they were vegetarian, but it seems to be only strictly followed by the Ceylonese Buddhists. That's where vegan comes from. They're the vegans. And others, it's if you talk about it, yes, it's yes, they're supposed to be, but you know they have their ways around.
Like Prabhu Nanda Prabhu was on a flight and he sat next to the Dalai Lama. This is back in the day.
Yeah.
In the first class.
Yeah.
and the stewardess came around and everyone ordered their meals, and the meals were delivered. Bhava Nanda had a vegetarian, had a vegetarian meal, Dalai Lama had a non-veg meal.
Mm-hmm.
Bhava Nanda Prabhu said to him, Lamaji, I thought ahimsa was one of your big principles. How is it you're eating non-veg? And Dalai Lama said, well, whatever the Buddha sends, that's what we eat. And Bhava Nanda Prabhu said, but the Buddha didn't send it. You ordered it. The stewardess came, I ordered vegetarian, but you ordered non-vegetarian.
And what do you say to that?
He got angry and didn't speak to him anymore.
Yes. Yes. He's probably avoided devotees ever since. Okay. Beginning with Nyaya, each of the Saddarshans in their own turn presents a more developed and comprehensive explanation of the conclusion of Vedic knowledge. Nyaya sets up the rules of philosophical debate and identifies the basic subjects under discussion, the physical world, the soul, God, and liberation. Vaisheshika engages the method of Nyaya or logic in a deeper analysis of the predicament of material existence by showing that the visible material forms to which we are also attached ultimately break down into invisible atoms. Right? So we see is that they're a natural progression philosophically. So when you have Vedanta, it already includes everything of value in all the other systems. See, all the systems are bona fide in that they present that aspect in an appropriate way. Where they're weak is that they're not complete. They only present logic, and by logic you'll know God. That we know we don't. But logic and how it works is perfectly presented in Gotama. No one else comes up with their own system of logic. Everybody uses Gotama. When it comes to atomic theory, everyone uses that. When it comes to Shankya, everyone uses that. You understand? Yeah, that's it. Shankya develops this analytical process further to help the soul become aloof to matter. Right? Because you've broken it down. In other words, I logically am able to tell what something is. Right? So I can tell what's real and what's not real. In the way of, you know, perceivable. Like that. Through authority, through anumana, through the senses. Then you're going to have, now I perceive these things, but okay, now I perceive this wall, it exists. But the whole point is, Vaisheshika will say, it's just made of atoms, so therefore what you see is temporary. It will break down and go back to atoms. So atoms are the, you know, therefore the end game within the material. But then Shankya will show us those atoms are put together. Why is that happening? Why is there a wall and then it becomes something else and something this and that? Right? So all these things are happening because that's the creation is how it's made and how each thing comes down. And so you know how the creation descends, so then you know how to reverse it to ascend. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now, like you could say, the physical theory and something more metaphysical?
Yes, yes, like that. Basic, what did you say? Huh? Yeah. Like that. Yeah, but he's dealing with that, but he's not explaining why it's like that. Mm-hmm. He's just saying that everything goes down to atom, which is true. But he's not explaining that, so Shankya will explain that. Mm-hmm. You know, but then how you're going to deal with that, because you have all this stuff to analyze, how you're going to deal with that. That's explained by Patanjali in yoga, because it's the mind has to accept it. So therefore the whole yoga process and the whole, you could say, yeah, that whole process is there. Because Shankya will show intellectually how it works, but ultimately it's the mind has to accept it, so therefore Patanjali. Right? Through yoga, the soul awakens its innate spiritual vision to see itself beyond the body. Right? So now you've seen the mind, but now you've taken the mind and taken it beyond the body. That there's the soul, there's the super soul, and like this. So they're not dealing with the physical. I mean, they're using the asanas and pranayama and all these different things. But the idea is to get actually to the transcendental platform. Mm-hmm. But we, as we see, not that many make it. Mm-hmm. It means very few make it to the platform where they get to, the siddhis, let alone samadhi where they're absorbed in the super soul. So those absorbed in the super soul, very few will take up devotional service. Some will merge. Very few even get to that place, but then how many actually get through the first part? How many get through stopping the breathing? So most people just do asanas and that for health. You know, it makes one peaceful, it's good for health, it makes a balanced lifestyle. And how many people do that? Right? So everything, you know, they'll do their, you know, few minutes a day, you know, like that. And remember who I said, can't remember who it was, but he was in some big guy's office. He had one of these, you know, big desks with these big swivel chairs. And on the wall behind him, he had a big picture of one of these, you know, local gurus. And when the devotee would be talking to him, be explaining something, every now and again, the person would just kind of flip the chair and swing around and then come back and stop and continue the discussion. He's wondering, what's he doing? Because it would be either, you know, he would remember the guru or something, a doubt, so he'd turn to the guru or something like that. So he'd spin around, see the guru, and then come back and then continue the discussion. Right? You know, so, yeah. So his meditation was for, you know, 3 nanoseconds as he spun around. So, you know, everybody practices their yoga to some degree. Right? Karma Mimamsa directs the soul to accept the duties prescribed in the Vedic scriptures because, okay, we've gotten the mind, but now if we're actually going to be dynamic to deal with all the different things of attachment, right? Because yoga technically only works for celibates. Means asana and pranayama, everyone will get some health benefit, but if you want to use it as a practice of self-realization, you have to be celibate. So we see is that the great sages before, they were either celibate and using, or even if they were married, before they had children, they would then practice. And then having perfected it, then they would have children and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. So it's going to be very limited who it applies to. So if you want to apply it to a broader, you actually have to use karma to engage everybody. Then the household ashram can be engaged. Does that make sense? But the problem is it will only engage. And there's a supreme, but it stops at just being perfectly situated in good karma is considered the top. Right? The other ones, at least there's a concept of liberation, mm-hmm. though most don't seem to get there like that. The yogis we see, they get distracted by yogic cities and stuff like that, because those come before. It appears that before samadhi, then these cities come up. So if you get past the siddhis, then you go for samadhi and then go on.
Are they basically a test? A distraction?
It could, yes. I mean, Maya's clever. You can't breathe, so many people stop then. Right? You know, so, you know, you go on, but then you get to the point where you're focused, your senses, you know, you're not connected to anything outside. That generally then makes all these siddhis come up. You take them, then okay. Job done. If not, then you come to the point of meditating on the super soul, but then she tricks you thinking that you are the super soul. Right? Then you make the mistake of I am that, meaning I am the supreme rather than I am Brahman. Right? And so then they get distracted there. And then, yeah, so that's Maya's job, is detours.
So Prabhupada mentioned how in the modern society yoga is practiced to increase sex drive.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's made to be, yes. That's the problem.
Can you say this is the kind of progressive nature of the six truths? Can you say that it's moving from Brahman to Paramahansa and ultimately Vedanta to Bhagavan?
He's saying, is these six schools, since they're a progression, can we say they're going from Brahman to Paramatma to Bhagavan? In a loose way, you could say, because it's like the first three schools will be definitely Brahman aspect, except for Kapila, means son of Devahuti. Then that will be, you know, devotional. But then you could say with Patanjali, that's on how you say Paramatma and Vaishesh. I mean, and Jaimini will be following the laws of Paramatma. But it's not necessarily that they're devotional. That's what you have to get. They're astika in that they're accepting the Veda and they're accepting the authority of the Lord. That's all these accept that. But the problem is it's not about devotion. It's not about pleasing the Lord. It's just that here are the laws. You follow the laws. You get the result. So for them, following the laws is their endeavor to please the Lord. But what they want from it is karma or jnana. They want to be liberated, like, yeah, basically they all want to be liberated. Only Jaimini, they talk about enjoying, and so when you're young, you get into the enjoyment aspect, and then when you're too old to enjoy, then you get into the liberation aspect. Like that. But the liberation is just to keep you busy and continue your piety until next life, when you're young again and you get back into the karma. Right? You know, so it's yeah. That makes sense. And then if you take from there Shankara, then that's just Brahman. You know? And that's even on the good day. You know. Is that okay? Yeah. Vedanta focuses on the supreme goal taught in the Upanishads, right? So that means the supreme person, devotion. Yes?
When we talked about the six goals in the last one would be Shankara.
Then you would say the supreme goal taught in the Vedas, supreme meaning Brahman. Because supreme can mean Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Right? And for the others, then if you're a karmi, then supreme means heavenly planets. Is that? Yeah. So yeah. Because you see, as like we mentioned, the Jaiminiists, then when they're older, then they may be studying Upanishads and all that, but they're only looking at it, basically it's jnana misra karma. Because they don't leave karma. So it's just by having the knowledge, they'll understand the more detachment and all that, because if you're more detached when you perform the rituals, you get a better result, greater piety. That will take you to higher realms of happiness. Is that...
Basically, just another flavor of pious activity.
Yes, yes, but all of them are theistic, but none of them are devotional. So only the Vaishnava Vedanta is devotional, right? But it already includes everything else. Therefore, we use logic, you know, to establish nicely the Nyaya Prasthan is based on the formation of logic. Right, that the atomic theory is part of that. We don't discuss it much, but you know, because it freaks people out too much. But but you know, it's part of our philosophy, right? Shankhya people can handle a bit more. Yoga, then you know, like that. As long as it's more on the physical side, the metaphysical, you know, the psychology and all that's not too appreciated. Like that. Does that make sense? Doing your work. And all that, and finding that works good as long as it's not Vedic and actually motive goodness. As long as it's passion and ignorance and everybody does their duty, they're good. Like that, you know. But as soon as you get into it, this is what you're supposed to do, then it's a problem. I want to do my duty, then yes. You have to do your duty. Oh, wait a minute. Like that.
What would be their conception of the Supreme then?
Who?
Means
the Supreme is there because he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. But the idea is I'm here in the material world, I'm suffering, I want to become happy. So by analyzing the material world or by removing the senses from the material world or engaging the senses properly according to a recommendation, I will transcend the miseries of the material world and come to that transcendental platform. They don't care. They're respectful, but they don't care. Just like you saw, a nice example would be Daksha. Right? His prayers in the Bhagavatam are very excellent prayers. But he's saying them as Bhakti Misakarma. So he's accepting that Vishnu is the supreme, only by his grace anything can happen. He accepts that. Like even at his yajna, you know, the famous yajna, he didn't invite Brahma or Shiva, but Vishnu was invited. He didn't come, but, you know, he was invited. Because he knows that Vishnu is the supreme, without him nothing functions. That's clear. So all the six schools know the supreme is the supreme. And by pleasing the supreme, you'll get to that supreme platform. But it's not about a relationship with the supreme. So in that way, they're all technically impersonal. Only Vaishnavas actually are personal. Right? It means those who follow the Vedic culture, these six schools, will be socially personal. So that's the thing. In the Vedic system, even though you have nerds, but they can socially function. Because everybody follows the same culture. Right? Because it's there in scripture. Because a nerd does something because it's scientific. Right? So therefore, here are the laws of social culture. They follow them very, very nicely. So you see, is they're very interactive and they can do all the things properly. How much life is there in it, that's another thing. But at least they can function in an environment that everybody else. Since the modern is speculative on what is the function, they can't relate to it because it's not science. Therefore, they can't deal with it. Does that make sense? So in the Vedic, culturally, everybody's the same. Philosophically, that's how you'll see the difference. But ultimately, they're all impersonalists. So in other words, socially, they're all karmis, and philosophically, they're all impersonalists. Like that. So only the Vaishnavas are actually then, you know, socially Vedic and philosophically then there. You know, personal. Right? So they're personal on both. Is that? Yeah. Okay. So originally the six darshans were specialized fields within a harmonious, comprehensive study of the Veda. Right, as we mentioned before, the Veda was one Veda, the Atharva Veda. So all these six schools, all these philosophies were all part of it. So it was naturally a comprehensive study to understand Vaishnava philosophy. Right? The purest and most ancient versions of these darshans are found in Srimad Bhagavatam, propounded by great Mahajans like Brahma, Narada, Shiva, the four Kumaras, Devahuti, Putra, Kapiladeva, and Sukadeva Goswami. But later and far lesser scholars of the darshans advanced opposing, contentious points of view. Thus, Vedic philosophy came to be misrepresented for selfish ends. For instance, Karma Mimamsa, which by 500 BC had become the foremost philosophy of the Brahmana class, was misused by bloodthirsty priests to justify their mass slaughter of animals in Vedic sacrifices. But the unexpected rise of a novel non-Vedic religion challenged the power of the Karma Mimamsa. This new religion was Buddhism. When King Ashoka instituted the Buddhist doctrine as the state religion of his empire, many Brahmanas abandoned Vedic scholarship to get altogether to learn and teach Nastika concepts of Ahimsa, non-violence, and Shunyata, voidism. This seriously eroded the influence of the Astika schools. Right, but it kept them from being misused because, see, Jaimini, the thing about Jaimini is it can defeat any of the other four schools below it. Right, means if it's a simple thing, you use logic to defeat it. If something more technical than Shankara, like this, up to Karma Mimamsa, then Karma Mimamsa is defeated by Vedanta. So that means all the other schools could be defeated by Karma Mimamsa. So if now they were misrepresenting, then that means naturally all the other schools to be off track. That's what I said. It was the major, you know, most were that. And basically you can say smartas are in that line. Like that. You know, very few. Now, then they would have known the sutras, they would have practiced the sutras, but very few people know that. As I was discussing before, Admatattva was studying the Tattva Sutras, right? The 50 sutras, we use those to study Ishvapanishad. So that's chit, achit, ishwara, your process, and your result. right? So the five Upanishadic things. So he was using that. He went and met a Jaimini scholar who actually knew the sutras and spoke on that. And they discussed for a long time. And after some time, the Jaimini philosopher asked him, what sutras are you using? What's your basis? Because he could understand that he had a consistency, and he always, no matter what he said, he always came in with the same kind of things from all the angles. So he could understand that he was logically doing something. But otherwise, most nowadays, they're not trained enough to even know what to follow a logical system, let alone appreciate one. Right? So that's why we'll know the system, but we'll present it according to the audience. Sorry? He said he was using Tattva Sutras. Okay. For that discussion. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Okay. In the 7th century after Christ, Buddhism, in its turn, was eclipsed by the rise of the teachings of the Vedanta Shankara, who revived the Vedic culture all over India. But Shankara's special formulation of Vedanta was itself influenced by Buddhism and is not truly representative of the original Vedanta Darshan taught by Vyas. Right? Because all he has to do is bewilder a Buddhist. Right? So that's all he's trying to do. In other words, he knows he's presenting the philosophy in a better way than what they understand so that they accept the Vedic version. And they accept the Vedic authority. But as far as the technical philosophy, in other words, the origin of it, the foundation of it, that's what he has to convince them of. Right? But actually, to change the philosophy, he's not trying to defeat their philosophy. He's trying to defeat their source. Because before, with Buddhism, it was taken away because of their misuse. But now that they've become peaceful in that over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, or thousands of years, Then they can go back with a peaceful mind, right, and properly follow. So then at that time, then all the, because the their major defects is that, okay, the material, there's nothing. That's the problem. If there's nothing, you just get rid of everything. Okay, everybody just, you know, there's nothing to discuss. So it's a much simpler philosophy. In personalism, you're talking about substance. With voidism, you're talking about nothing, right? So now if there's nothing, how do you get something? Right? So it's from imagination, but where the imagination comes from, because there's nothing to begin with, right? So it already they're bewildered. So all you have to do is bring it in that, the jiva is, the concept of jiva comes from illusion, the same way as that there's individual comes from illusion. So it's the same. It's just Buddhism. Right? But if you look at it, how can there be illusion if there's only void or Brahman? So that means that illusion has to be part of Brahman, or an expansion of Brahman. And since Brahman is unchanging, then it can't be Brahman itself. Therefore, it has to be the energy of Brahman is transforming. Therefore, what do we say?
Shakti
Parinamavad. Right? Because some will say Brahma Parinamavad, but that doesn't even fly amongst themselves, because then you're saying Brahman changes, and the Shastra says Brahman is unchangeable, so that actually won't work. So that's the only way they can kind of explain it. But even that's not a good explanation, since it's unchangeable. So it's only, Brahman has energy. It has qualities. So then it does that make sense? So that's then brought in by the Vaishnav preachers. So they defeat this weakness in the Shankara Vedanta. Right? Because they've accepted Vedanta, then they'll discuss Vedanta. Now with Ramanuja and Madhva, then they can defeat their impersonal concepts. Is that...
If all of this was a setup for Lord Chaitanya's golden age,
yes,
that would seem to indicate that this text that we're about to study, Govinda Bhashya, is like the culmination of the... In one sense.
Yes, it's the combination of all the philosophical schools and all that. But, as is said, because it's presented in Nyaya form, it will be harder to understand. So only by studying Bhagavatam can you really appreciate Vedanta Sutra. So it's because we've studied now for many years and the analytical aspects, it'll be easier to understand. Is that? Yeah. Okay. After Shankara, Vedanta was refined by the schools of great acharyas like Ramanuja, Madhva, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, having shed the baggage of Shankara's crypto-Buddhism. Crypto-Buddhism. I like that. Where'd you get that term? Nice term. Oh, crypto-Buddhism. He's good at that. You know? Vedanta philosophers soared to heights of dialectical sophistication that has been much appreciated by many Western intellectuals. Vedantic dialectics are represented today in the Bhashyas, commentaries of the Acharyas, and the Tikas, sub-commentaries of their disciples. All possible philosophical positions, including some bearing remarkable resemblance to the ideas of European philosophers, are therein proposed, analyzed, and refuted. Right? So, because we were saying before, is anything that actually has some substance has to have its basis originally in the Veda. Therefore, thinkers around the world, no matter where they are, the things that they come up with, those that are more solid or the core points, will actually be in line with the Vedas. But the problem is they don't know how to bring it to proper conclusion. So then it will, again, be not whole. Now, if the Vedic six systems are not whole, then let alone non-Vedic systems, they'll be even less whole. Right? So, you know, we're recommending a whole philosophy diet rather than, you know, these sub, yes.
Holistic approach.
Yes, you know, just, I mean, you know, the complete, you know, none of these synthetic and other kind of, you know, processed, you know, the natural, organic.
Unholy.
Yeah, Vedic. Yeah, okay. Srila Prabhupada on Vedanta Sutra. In Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, Srila Prabhupada produces the Vedanta Sutra as follows. The Vedanta Sutra, which consists of aphorisms revealing the method of understanding of Vedic knowledge, is the concise form of all Vedic knowledge. It begins with the words Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire about the absolute truth. The human form of life is especially meant for this purpose, and therefore the Vedanta Sutra very concisely explains the human mission. This is confirmed by the words of the Vayu and Skanda Puranas, which define a sutra as follows. Alpaksharam asandigdham saravat vishvato mukham astobhyam anavadhyam cha sutram sutra vido viduhu. A sutra is a compilation of aphorisms that express the essence of all knowledge in a minimum of words. It must be universally applicable and faultless in its linguistic presentation.
Right, so universal, it means it has to be talking on principle, whatever level of principle you're using. So Vedanta then is working on transcendental. Like Jaimini sutras will be the essential points that overarching that the, you could say, the primary within the secondary of the Vedic. But Vedanta is actually then the primary within, you know, the, how you say, above the secondary. Does that make sense?
Anyone familiar with such sutras must be aware of the Vedanta Sutra, which is well known among scholars by the following additional names. 1. Brahma Sutra. 2. Sharirika. 3. Vyasa Sutra. 4. Bhadarayana Sutra. 5. Uttara Mimamsa. And 6. Vedanta Darshan. Sharirika means Shankara's, because it's so well known. Like, I think in the Western Academy, when they talk about Vedanta, they don't know that there is something else existing other than Shankara. That's all they teach. If you do the comparative philosophies and that, it'll always be a study of Shankara. Like that. Yes. Because it's about Brahman. You know, it's about transcendence. Okay. Footnote also. There is a...
The end of the last quote.
Oh, there is a one. Okay, 3. As we understand from this verse, the main characteristics of a sutra are the following. Alpaksharam, consisting of minimum of number of letters.
asandignam, without doubt as regard to the meeting. Saravat must contain the essence of the subject, and Vishvatomukam, and yet reflect all aspects of the same. Has to give the aspect. So anybody can't just write sutras. Mm-hmm. Only great personalities can write sutras. Right? So that's why all these great philosophers, but they're following, you know, Vyasa's sutras. Right? They don't try to write something else. Or Jaimini wrote, or Gautama wrote. So these six schools, they've written the sutras. Everybody else follows those. Mm-hmm. Like that. And then in grammar, you have Panini. He does the sutras. And when it comes down to Alpaksharam, consisting of a minimum of number of letters, he was like the king. Like that. Jiva Goswami mentions that if he could remove half a syllable from a sutra, he would be as happy as if his wife just gave birth to a healthy son. Like that. He would be that happy. So, yes. So, therefore, it's so concise, you need 7,000 verses of commentary to explain it. Yeah. There's one that's even just Ak, like that. I mean, I don't know if you picked that up from Martians, but, you know. Yes. Or the Martians picked it up from him. Yes.
In Hainamrita Vyakarana, Srila Jiva Goswami says that the sutras don't need to use sandhi.
Mm.
And that's related to this without doubt regards the meaning.
Mm.
Sometimes sandhi can be ambiguous.
Okay, yes, yes. So then they just... That's why you see is within them, if they want to create some difference, they'll put in commas. Mm-hmm. That will make the difference between all, from what I understand, all six schools. The sutras are the same. There's no difference in the words. But how they group the sutras and which parts are a part of which sutra and which like that, that will be a difference. Like we have 555 sutras. Some have more than us, some have less than us. Like that. Okay, very good. Like that. Because even Shankara, when he misrepresents, he only takes sutras that you could twist. And then he'll say, you go on interpreting like this. He doesn't do the ones you can't twist. He leaves that for his disciples to crack their heads, and it keeps them off the street, right? Like that. Okay. And four. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushanas, in his Govinda Bhashi commentary in Vedanta Sutra, cites the four essential elements of the work as follows, footnote 4. Since sutras are brief in nature, they are supported by bhashya, or commentaries that explain the meaning of the original text in detail. It is defined by the following verse. The knowers of bhashya know bhashya to be that in which the meaning of sutras are explained with words in keeping with the sutra order. In addition, it explains the usage of its own words where necessary. So, in other words, you won't just go, it won't be like just in prose. It'll be the order in which the words are, that will be the explanation. So it'll tend to be a bit technical. That's why then you have bhashyas. Then on the bhashyas, you'll have tikkas. Because then the tikkas can be more like how Prabhupada's purports are. Like that. You follow the logic and which is the best way to understand it. Huh?
Vartika.
Like that. So instead of doing it like this according to the order of the words, because otherwise you find, because if you do it according to the order of the words, it doesn't go down so well. I don't remember if you remember when we did that one study on Dharma, on the Dharma Shastra and Manu. Mm-hmm. Like that. It would have, for in the commentaries, it would simply take the words and then give explanations on the words. It didn't seem to do much for people. Like that. So if you already understand the meanings, then it reminds you of them. But if you don't, then you need more. So you need tikkas on that. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurav Devaki.